What is executive presence? When someone talks about an individual possessing professional or executive presence, they are talking about the perception that person creates through how he or she interacts in formal and informal settings, in all modes of communication. Tarot International offers a one-day professional presence workshop where you learn how to develop and consistently communicate your professional brand. Visit tarot.com. That's T-E-R-O.com to learn more. This is Michelle from the Tarot team.
Insight on Business, the News Hour with Michael Libby is made possible through the support of Aureon, Human Resources and More for businesses and nonprofits, Aureon.com, Remax Concepts, real estate professionals with offices in the Des Moines Metro, Nevada, and Cedar Rapids, realestateconcepts.net.
This week, 10 speakers had 15 minutes to bring their A game on leadership and business to an eager audience willing to learn about both. The event was put together by Tom Hendrickson, sort of a mini TED Talk. After the event, which lasted only about 3 hours, I sat down with four of the presenters and asked them about a quote they offered during their presentation. We start out with Liz Need, who spoke about her climbing Mount Kilimanjaro and said, quote, "It takes 40 people to get 14 folks up the mountain." How does that relate to business?
I really believe in the concept, first of all, that it takes that many people. It takes, you know, three times or two times the number of people to lead a group in a stretch goal, in a difficult goal. And when I talk to people, we're upside down. So in corporate America, we're upside down. And that's the reason why there's a struggle, is that there's not enough focus on how do you lead people, how do you take people who are seasoned and utilize them effectively so that we can bring more seasoned and effective people into the workforce. So we have one person, one lone person who's exhausted and loud, trying to pull people up a mountain rather than a community walking with them up a mountain. That's really what it is. And I believe that what we don't understand is it's a temporary situation. I'm not climbing a mountain every day, but they committed 7 days of their life to help me climb the mountain. And now I can help someone climb a mountain. I literally, with a map and some instructions, could help someone climb another mountain. So you're creating strength by taking that time, making that investment. And now you're creating people who will be able to do the same for others.
And I would just suspect that that also has to do with building your leadership team along the way.
Yeah, it's completely a mentorship concept of building your team, and it works. It builds fans.
And you're living proof.
I am. I love mountains, and I loved having people take care of me.
Why not, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Liz Need, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks, Liz.
Thank you.
I sat down with Adam Carroll, who said, "We need to send out ripples with each interaction, and the goal is to have them return to us with positive energy." Adam, what does that mean?
To begin with, what we have to understand is that we are energetic beings. So we put off energy, whether it's our thoughts, our actions, our interactions with other people. And we have the ability to either send out positive energy or negative energy. And without making this sound too Pollyanna, as in, oh, every right. day's positive and it's all good.
Sure.
There are interactions that we've had in our lifetime that you could consider neutral. There is no energy transfer taking place. No positive, no negative. And I would call those transactional interactions. And I believe that what we have to have is more relational interactions. And our relational interactions are ones where we make sure that the positive energy is transferred from one person to another. So what I believe we need to do is see the person in their environment, how they're being, how their energy is being presented. And you can tell point blank if someone is having a good day or a bad day. And I believe our goal in those interactions is to leave them with a little more positive energy than they had prior to our interaction.
And how does that impact business and leadership?
Immensely. It impacts it immensely. It's, you know, take any environment, any office environment, any corporate group that I've done work with, and I can tell you when I walk in, is the culture positive or is it negative? And you know that if it's positive, there's probably a lot of trust. There's a lot of relationship building. These people know each other. They don't just work together. They go to lunch together. They have coffee together. They know about each other's children and so on and so forth. The negative environments are one where you don't know much about me and I don't know much about you. There's not a lot of trust. And when you walk in, because there's not a lot of trust, there's no transparency. Communication probably suffers. There's conflict, or maybe not conflict, but tension. And that tension is just a thin layer of negativity that runs throughout the organization. It's just very apparent.
So it's positive to love your coworkers.
It is positive to love your coworkers. Yes. And it's not only positive, it's multiplicative. It's exponential. And I think we can all do a better job of that.
Thank you, Adam.
My pleasure.
Sarah Noel Wilson, well, she was in and she talked about connections and conversation and said that 9 out of 10 conversations miss the mark. So, Sarah, what are we doing wrong and how can we improve?
Yeah, so there's a couple of different tips that I would give. And first, I just want to give a shout out that these are based on work called Conversational Intelligence by Judith E. Glaser. But the first one is listening to connect. So I think we're in an epidemic of people not really listening to each other. We all think we're better listeners than we really are. And one of the ways that I like to encourage people to think about that is we spend most of our day listening from a place of what does this mean to me? Mm. What is relevant to me? How do I apply this? But when we're in relationships and wanting to build that connection, I really think we need to listen from a place of what does this actually mean to them? So what are they saying, not saying? What do I notice in their body language? And how to get curious about that. I'm convinced the greatest gift we can give somebody is to just really hear them.
Some people, Sarah, say that you have to be in the moment.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Well, if I'm not in the moment, where am I?
You can't listen, right?
Right. No.
Thank
and
you.
here's the thing, right? So what we don't realize is that there's things that challenge us from listening. So if we're listening and we're literally waiting for our turn to talk, you're not really listening. If you're talking to me and I'm taking your information so I can use it against you to prove my point, I'm not really listening. I actually think one of the hardest times, but one of the most important times to be curious is when we're in conflict. So how can I really try to understand, well, what does this really mean to you right now? Why is this so important to you? So the listening is such an important one, and I love that language of listening to connect, which versus just active listening. So that's one thing. Another thing is we can ask questions from a place of curiosity, right? And not asking questions that we already know the answers to, but genuinely get curious and double click. So for example, think of how many times we're in conversations with somebody and they say, oh, you know, I just want a vacation in Florida. And then the other person goes, oh, I went down in Florida too, because it's human nature for us to go through our archives and go, how does this connect with me and how do I understand that? But if we're really building relationships, you might say like, well, so tell me more. What did you like about vacation? What did you get out of it? And it's amazing to me, A, what information you can get, but just how special that person feels when you get really genuinely curious with them. Yeah. So those are two tips I would recommend.
Sarah Noel Wilson, thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you.
Finally, Kevin Courtney was talking about safety in the workplace. Not so much about injury, but that people should feel safe to speak out if they don't agree. We said, hey, Kevin. Explain that.
So one of the issues that I run into working with leaders is they're somewhat reticent to speak out on issues that they say may be disconcerting to them as to where the business is going or strategies or the culture and so on. And the reason for that is because they don't feel safe in bringing that up. And what I mean by that is, if I do, are there going to be repercussions? Am I going to be stigmatized? Am I going to be put down? Am I going to be ignored? Am I going to be seen as less than? So the whole point of that is, if you want leadership to flourish, you have to have a culture that allows those questions to be spoken and to receive for what they are. It's for the betterment of the organization. So anytime that there's create some hurdles or hesitations or barriers to that, you are just diminishing the ability for people to lead and to speak up on those. All right. And what I mean by speak up, I'm not talking about people hollering and screaming. No, I'm talking about speaking respectfully about to say, I have a different thought as to where this organization needs to go or what this business strategy is all about or what our marketing plan is, because that's what I've run into in coaching. And I've had one particular leader say, I've tried that and I get squashed. My voice can't be heard.
How do you cultivate that? as a leader?
In one organization that they've been a client of mine for years, the way they've done that is it always starts from the top. I mean, it's no different. You got to model it, and it's part of their corporate values, and they live those corporate values, all right? And when you talk with people in the organization, they know those values. They live them. Now, is it always 100% of the time? No. But they know that it's there, it's embedded in the culture, in their daily work. And in that particular organization, the managers are even evaluated on it. It becomes part of who they are, their behavior, and how they create that environment where those tough questions and issues can rise to the top and can be listened to and honored and respected. It takes work, just like anything else. I don't know, hopefully that answers. So
perfect. Thank you, Kevin.
You bet.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
So there you have it. Voices from Leadin 15, a program where each speaker had 15 minutes to bring it when it came to business, leadership, and management. Good stuff. When we come back, we'll take a look at the markets. That's coming up next on the Business News Hour.